critically analyzing global affairs. This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. I'm joined by James Guzman, once again, American-born writer and insurance broker specializing in non-conventional markets and countries, founder of the Borderless blog and podcast. And if you need health insurance, borderlesshealthinsurance.com. What's going on over in San Miguel de Allende, James?
I am here once again. I remain in San Miguel de Allende. Another Wednesday, a little dreary here, I guess, because of the hurricane stuff going on. But other than that, all things are good. How about you?
I'm doing well. I finally got my internet fixed after calling for 4 days straight. It's really weird because they saw my modem was turned off, and then they just assumed I wasn't here, and then they just unplugged me from the street and gave my connection to someone else. And luckily there was an open spot. Otherwise, I don't know what would have happened. It's kind of absurd, you know. But anyways, I got my internet back. And what's on your radar these days?
Oh, you know, it's all good. Just been kind of staying at the home still, you know. In 2 more days, the baby's going to be 1 month old, so it's still a pretty small child. So, you know, been kind of supporting my wife, taking care of the baby, but kind of staying around the house. And so I've had some time to take care of stuff around the house and also watch some different series or whatever kind of junk I see on TV, listen to tons and tons of podcasts, doing yard work and you know, gardening and stuff like that. But last night I watched that new Netflix documentary that some people are talking about, the one about Jeffrey Dahmer. Have you heard about that?
I haven't heard about, I mean, I don't have Netflix, but yeah. I recall when that, all of that happened. I don't remember how old I was, but I mean, I'm from Illinois. So I was in Illinois, and that guy was, I think that was in Wisconsin. No, not
Wisconsin,
too far.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Just, it's like 2 hour drive, three maybe, from where I was, and just hearing that story. And how was this film on Netflix about him?
Yeah. So, I'd heard a lot of people were talking about it. Some people that I know that are into film and stuff saying it was pretty well written and stuff. And I said, okay, well, the hell with it. Let's watch it. So, okay. This cinematography and the, you know, it was written well and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was entertaining. It had some interesting motifs of religiosity at the end when Jeffrey Dahmer actually converts to Christianity and is baptized, and you know, other things like that. And I thought it was pretty accurate from what I know of what happened there. But there were definitely some themes and some things that you know, like with all of these, I just noticed on all these streaming services, they always have these you know, like serial killer series and stuff like that, and movies and things like that. And so it's kind of, it's weird how they want to keep these stories alive or keep kind of this idea of, like, and another theme with Dahmer was the Satanism. He was into Anton LaVey Satanism. He had his like a altar and his book there and stuff like that. And so, you know, like, I don't know why they want to keep these themes, but it seems like they want to keep them alive and into in the culture. And it's also kind of interesting, like at the end, they talked about Gacy, the killer clown, you know, John Wayne Gacy and this other guy. I actually listened to this podcast series. It's called The Candyman and the Clown, or The Clown and the Candyman. Now I can't remember, but something like that. And it is a full documentary, like real crime podcast, where they show that it's now proven, it's not a conspiracy theory or anything like that, that John Wayne Gacy and this other guy were absolutely connected to a child trafficking ring. And there were a lot of politicians and other very powerful people that were in this ring that were caught. And it's kind of the whole story that hasn't been told, and puts it together into this long podcast form. So Yeah, I would recommend that if people are at all interested in that kind of thing. I thought that podcast was pretty good. I think it's the Clown and the Candyman, I believe. And so anyway, they did mention that, you know, he was very in the same area, the Dahmer was. And they mentioned John Wayne Gacy, but I don't know. They didn't mention anything about that, about, you know, them being, you know, it was just kind of put out there that they were like lone wolves. But he could very well have been involved in some sort of a, you know, a bigger ring, because it's really strange. Like, how come all of these serial killers and, you know, crazy pedophile, whatever people, they all popped up at the same time period. And even in the series, they talked about, all the theories, his priest, you know, the Dahmer goes to a priest and he says, well, nobody really knows why there's people like you right now. Some people say it's because of the interstate highway system. Some people say it's because of pornography and all this type of stuff. Well, you know, if that were the theories back then, we all know we still have those, and we didn't, you know, we still have that problem. So if it wasn't somehow orchestrated or some weird thing going on, then it was just copycats. But anyways, it's kind of, that's kind of suspicious. I think the whole, serial killer meme and why they want to put out this very well-made and obviously something with a high budget to make, you know, put that back in the public consciousness again.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. It's like, I think there's a number of points there where, why do they keep, you know, pulling that out? Maybe on one hand, we've heard before that Hollywood just, it's lost its creativity. They are not creating anything original anymore. They're just making remakes of remakes and sequels, endless sequels. So I think we've noticed that trend for the last couple of years. They're not coming up with anything new. So their inspirations run dry. But also, why do they want to keep this alive? As you say, maybe like, they want to produce a new generation of, I don't know, you know, such killers, because we've got all the more and more each generation is on all these crazy psychotropic drugs. And then they watch this stuff. It influences you, the video games, the documentaries, the films. So that's also weird. And it's like that's so long ago. Like, that, I mean, there's new stuff you can talk about. But what you also, I had no idea that apparently he converted to Christianity. And I do recall reading about the Son of Sam, the serial killer in New York, I think it was in the 70s, who killed like 30 or 40 people. I saw interviews with him where he converted to Christianity. He said he had like demons telling him to do stuff. I personally, as a Christian, believe that is possible. Like, there's no way of any of us telling if it's actually true, but I think if, you know, the Son of Sam or Jeffrey Dahmer, between him and the Maker, if they really, you know, like repented, and I think they could be end up in heaven, who knows? But I think, anyways, I don't know what else to say about all of that.
That was basically the reason, as far as in the series, that's what the reason that they gave is because he said that he felt it was the devil working through him. And so if he repented, that he could, you know, be washed of his sins. And so that was the reason that he did that. Or at least that's what he said. And I thought that the last episode on there was kind of interesting, that they did go through that kind of like the religious angle and people that were struggling with the hatred of him and how they could forgive and forget something like that, which is a Christian teaching. And that was another thing that I thought was kind of prominent, which is, I guess it's just well, there's two things, I guess. One thing was the LGBT thing, because he was obviously gay, and they put this series in the LGBTQ like brand, or not brand, but what do they put them in, like categories? So if you go to the LGBT movies, that's like the top is Jeffrey Dahmer. So that's like, that's kind of like not really great for those people. But so there was that angle, and they really played that up along with the minorities angle. So some of the people that he targeted were Filipinos, and also a lot of Black people, because he lived in a rundown area of town. And they really talked a lot. They had Jesse Jackson there, who was making it a big racial issue. And they even went so far, I thought there was some kind of like, anti-white type programming when his father, who he was obviously like of German ancestry. I think they mentioned that sometimes in the movies and in the movie. And his father even said like he was genetically disposed, or, you know, he said genetically programmed to like be so sadistic, that was part of his genes, you know, that he had, that his father had felt the same way and stuff like that. So I thought there were kind of, you know, things like that. And so anyways, yeah, you have all these different types of narratives that are getting programmed in there. And yeah, I do think that, well, another thing you could think of is just people being scared of your fellow man, you know, being scared to go out because you never know, just this regular, nice, you know, middle-class, you know, middle-aged white guy could be this disgusting, crazy serial killer, you know? So it also, in a way, lowers trust in society.
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy stuff. We're going to have to jump to our first a break again. James's website is jamesguzman.com or borderlessblog.com. We shall return.
TNT Radio's Mike Ryan.
The top official at the U.S. Justice Department was a law partner with Hunter Biden's attorney, Chris Clark, raising serious concerns about potential conflicts of interest as the years-long federal probe and the president's son has reportedly reached a critical stage. Clark, a partner at New York-based firm Latham & Watkins, worked with Nicholas McQuaid on at least four different cases, which he was also a partner at the practice, according to court records. The cases were high-stakes commercial litigation where the pair regularly defended clients facing multi-million dollar lawsuits. McQuaid was named acting head of the Justice Department's Criminal Division on January 20, 2021. That's the day President Biden was inaugurated. Clark started representing Hunter Biden a month before. Hunter Biden has been under investigation by the Department of Justice since 2018, and a probe initially centered around taxes that's reportedly expanded into potential money laundering and violations of foreign lobbying laws. McQuaid's involvement brings up questions about the ethics of the Hunter Biden probe.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization. The left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem, except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts or be their next door neighbors or endorse them for president like Joe Biden. Then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at SalemNow.com.
We wear the PPE and wade through the muck so you don't have to. Never miss our thought-provoking take on the latest news and current affairs. Take TNT Radio wherever you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
And we're back with James Guzman of Borderless Blog. He'll be with us second hour, as well as Vance from My Latin Life joins us, and the three of us sort of riff on life in Latin America and passports and digital nomadism and expatriation and so forth. And speaking of passports, Edward Snowden has received his Russian passports, and apparently Russia does allow for dual citizenship. And you also posted an article from Mark Nestman of Nestman, Nestmann.com. I've been reading his stuff for over a decade, and he's all about international diversification. What are your thoughts on Snowden getting a Russian passport? Apparently you can serve as a Russian soldier for a year and get Russian citizenship. So, you know, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I haven't like really gone down the Snowden rabbit hole as much as I probably should. I have seen him speak, and I watched the movie, and, you know, I always thought he was a hero and stuff, but I also hear a lot of people saying that it's like a, the whole thing is a psyop, you know, like Snowden. Because, you know, after all is said and done, what really happened? Now everybody just thinks that, you know, okay, yeah, we know that the intelligence agencies or NSA or whatever have complete access to all our stuff online, and everybody just accepts it, right? They're doing all this illegal stuff, but oh well, right? So it's almost like setting up the panopticon where you know you're getting watched all the time, but you just don't know at what point, right? And so you just kind of you always self-regulate. So that was kind of the you know, the result of all the Snowden revelations. But you know, regardless, you know, I hope he enjoys it in Russia. Seems like an okay place. I mean, I've never been over there, but I have some Russian friends, and I see them on social media, and it seems to be beautiful. They're having a blast. They live the same, you know, same life as we are over here. So I don't know. They were here in Mexico visiting for a while, and yeah, they said it's no problem over there. And yeah, as far as the passport, yeah, you have, if you go over there and you want to fight in the war, you can go fight for a year and you're eligible for a passport. Or if you're on the other side of the conflict, you can go and join the, you know, be the Ukrainian front line, you know. And then I think after 2 years, you get eligible for a passport. But in Ukraine, you're not eligible for double citizenship. So you have to give up your current citizenship if you want to do that. But with Russian, you can have two. I don't know if you can have a U.S. and Russian passport. I don't think that one of those countries wouldn't be happy about that. yeah, even if you're from the U.S., you have to give up your U.S. Citizenship if you want to become Ukrainian and use yourself as cannon fodder and perhaps survive.
I don't see any reason you couldn't be a dual U.S. Russian citizenship, because the law says, you know, both countries have dual citizenships, unless the U.S. government specifically intervenes. But also, as the article by Nestman says, you can become a French citizen by joining the French Foreign Legion for 5 years. I've mentioned before the Russian option. The other Russian option is to go live in Siberia for 5 years and work a plot of land, and you could also become a Russian.
Wow, sounds like a blast.
And just to what you're saying, I've been to Russia, and it's an interesting place, but it's not for everyone. You know, I can literally live anywhere. I've lived in like Siberian conditions, basically, on the northern tip of Kazakhstan, and but it's not, you know, for everyone. It's sort of rougher conditions, and it doesn't have all of the amenities that one might like. And I'm a Slav. Russians are Slavs, and so I have that sort of familiarity. And so, yeah, not quite for everyone. But
what do you mean not for everybody? What is it lacking?
I mean, just that, I mean, you know, you have the culture stuff, and then, you know, the cuisine. It's not, you know, if you're used to like Latin America or Western Europe or US, you might not get quite all of the things you're used to. You know, just different mentality and things. You know, everyone points out how in America, everyone smiles sort of ridiculously. Like everyone just this mm-hmm. fake sort of smile. Hi, how are you? It's fake. But in Russia, it's like no one really smiles on the surface unless they really mean it, you know, which I kind of prefer. Like I kind of prefer when people smile when they really mean it instead of, you know, being sort of fake going around every day with the fake smile on your face, you know.
You know, something interesting about the smile, like biologically, you know, whether you think that humans evolved from apes or not, if you want to look at similarities, apes when especially the higher level apes, if when they smile, it usually is submission. So like if another ape comes and like attacks them or is like running towards them in an aggressive way, they'll smile. And it's kind of like when a dog flips over. So like smiling means basically like I surrender. So
yeah, I get what you're saying.
I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. But yeah, but also in Russia, it seems like they have like, you know, politicians like actual like manly guys and, you know, like people of action, like, you know, that I don't know, that I would expect to be, you know, with a powerful government.
Well, in general, the men are manly and the women expect the men to be manly in I mean, most of the world, except for the Western woke world. I mean, seriously. And I think that's right. And that's how it should be. Like literally 95% of society in Russia and Kazakhstan and Mongolia, where I've lived, the men are like super manly. And that's how it's always been since the beginning of time. And I think that's how it always should be, my opinion.
Yeah.
And it has to be that way. I mean, the harsh conditions, like I've lived in the Gobi Desert, and I mean, it's brutal. And the men need to know how to, the animal husbandry, the, you know, building stuff, fixing stuff. And, you know, the women have the jobs that the women do. The men have the jobs that the men do. Otherwise, if we wouldn't have survived up until now.
Right. Yeah, I just know, you know, especially when we talk about conflict, I mean, you know, in just the time of peace and everybody's happy and, you know, we're all, you know, trying to push back the borders of society or whatever in these times of, you know, boom time or whatever, then that's one thing. But then when you're talking about conflict, okay, well, you know, it's really funny when they have all these, like, you know, they juxtapose the pictures of, you know, the United States, you know, like they got the Marines wearing pink heels or whatever. And then they got the transgender, what is she like, the Space Force, the Air Force lady, and they got a bunch of people. I know, you know, I was in the military and yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a lot more based on kind of politically correct training and definitely not on merit and on strength. It's it's a lot of busy work, honestly. It's a lot of people that are just like there for a paycheck. They could really don't know anything about the Constitution or the history of the United States, and they don't really care about it, to be honest with you. I mean, it's like any bureaucracy. That's how it was when I was in, and it's probably worse now. You know, it's like the post office or something, you know. And so, you know, you see that up against like some really, you know, big, you know, guys from Russia that are like used to, you know, running around in the snow when they were little babies or whatever. Or like, you know, sometimes they show the Chinese army, you know, doing all these different types of exercise. And it's just kind of funny.
Speaking of Constitution, James, you know, I mean, you still believe in the Constitution? I had Legal Man on yesterday, and, you know, his position nice. On he thinks everything's rigged. So we're going to jump to our news break. We'll be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Hurricane Ian rapidly intensified off Florida's southwest coast Wednesday morning, gaining top winds of 155 miles per hour, just shy of the most dangerous Category 5 status. North Korea's test fired two more missiles the day before Vice President Harris goes to South Korea. Russia is preparing to annex four more areas of Ukraine its troops took control of during the invasion, following a referendum vote that the U.S. claims is a sham.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So guess who's in Mexico, James? My mayor from Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, is traveling to Mexico,
oh my
city,
God.
So I didn't have to go back to Chicago to visit her. She's come to me. Apparently Chicago and Mexico City, they have a sister city relationship. So yeah, Lori's in the country. I may have forgotten to mention now, I've left the Adriatic and I'm coming to you live from back in Mexico. So yeah, just interesting that Lori is light footing around Mexico.
Oh, I didn't hear the gunshots. I didn't know you were back yet.
Yeah, right. The gunshots, dogs in the background.
Yeah. Right.
But there is, I mean, good news. Some other stuff that I've been picking up is this connectivity trend with Mexico, where I'm reading that El Paso, Texas wants to reestablish direct flights to Mexico. This is going to increase, of course, business and offering nonstop flights from El Paso to Mexico City, Guadalajara, where I am, Cancun, Puerto Vallarta, Chihuahua City. And that's so cool. Like, I could just hop a flight now. I might go more often than to Texas. I mean, I've never been, but I might go and mm-hmm. I just hop one easy flight and no more masks and that garbage for now, at least. And there's that.
Oh, really?
And then, some airlines, it's weird. Some are doing it. Some aren't.
How was it, actually, by the way? You know, you were just on you should tell me. I haven't flown in a while. How's that with the airplane?
Actually, the mask mandate at the airports here in Mexico, I think in 1 or 2 days, they're going to remove it. So you won't need masks in transport anymore and anywhere basically in Mexico. So do they still have the vax requirement for foreigners though in the US, which is nuts. But also Panama, Copa Airlines is going to be launching new routes all across Mexico as well. So you've got Panama connecting with Mexico, Texas connecting with Mexico. And so, I mean, this is a plus, no, for overall, for anyone interested in digital nomadism, expatriation, and so forth.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And not just that, but for commerce in general, you know, for business. Texas isn't that close. I guess I'll have to fly again. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But like, you know, Texas is so close. I've always just been, you know, like want to just driven, you know, it's not that big of a deal just to drive up. But I guess if it's not such a pain in the ass, then I can try a flight. But I don't mind Texas. I think it's a good kind of area if you want to like straddle, you know, Mexico, Texas. Both of them have different things that are beneficial. So, you know, they have a lot of conferences and things like that up there. And so it's good to be able to pop up quickly. Unfortunately, you know, where I live, it's like an hour away from any airport, but it's right there in Guadalajara. So that's cool, man. And I look forward to, you know, hopefully we can get past this, the COVID madness, and they don't bring it back in the winter or something. But, you know, I like, you know, the travel being open up to more people, but I'm not sure if that's the trend, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. And another trend is the legalization of cannabis. And we've got, again, in the news, mm-hmm. ex-president Vicente Fox calling on lawmakers to finalize cannabis regulation. I did an interview on TNT some months back with Luis Armendariz, who's a lawyer working on that in Mexico. He's going to have a world summit over near you in Guanajuato mm-hmm. in October next month, called Canna Mexico. Are you going to go? That's interesting.
You can come with me. I think it's between. Let's go, man. We'll do a YouTube video.
We'll live stream for TNT.
We could live stream
from the
smoke
cannabis,
a bong. We'll be smoking bongs and you know.
Yeah.
Do a Cheech and Chong episode.
Chong. Yeah. I met him back in the day. You can go to my website and see a photo with me and Chong. I went to his comedy show and he was just walking around. It's funny. He actually, he literally said, he called me handsome. I was flattered, you know. So, I'm not joking. Like,
he got hit on by Chong.
I got my job. I'm not joking. So, anyway, so we've got this thing going on in Mexico. It says the Supreme Court has ruled the prohibition of marijuana unconstitutional, and directed Congress to legalize its recreational use. But a bill to that end still hasn't passed the Senate a year and a half later. That's what I talked about with Luis Armendariz and TNT. It's really going slow, the process. I actually thought it was going faster, but it's really going slow.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about it is, if they are able to do that and just legalize it across the whole country in one fell swoop, then it's going to be the largest market in the world with legalized recreational use of cannabis. So that's a pretty big deal. And you know, the big thing with Vicente Fox is he's saying that it's going to take away a lot of the money from the cartels. I'm not so sure about that. I guess we'll see. I mean, I suppose they still make some money with it, but I mean, a lot. I don't know how much money are they really making selling brick weed to people in the U.S. or Canada? Because you know, they got, if anything, I think they're bringing more of it down here to Mexico, like the really good stuff that they grew up there. I don't know how much that's going to affect it, but I guess any little bit helps, and you know, I'm all for it. So I hope that they do that.
But you know, it's funny. The Vicente Fox says in an interview, he says, legalizing and regulating this industry will take a lot of revenue away from cartels and put it in the hands of marijuana growers and business people. But guess what's just gonna happen? Okay, yeah. The cartels won't grow the marijuana, but then they're gonna go to those same marijuana growers and extort them for the piso tax, like the 20%, 30%, 40% cartel tax, where if you don't pay them, they're gonna kill you. And so
another way to look at it, you know, how I used to always, before, you know, I used to say that, you know, because every time a politician would talk about legalization, they would always say, you need to be legal, regulated, and taxed. And I'd be like, well, damn, if you're going to regulate and tax the hell out of it, then just leave it illegal, you know, because at least in the United States, even when it was illegal, it was still very, you know, it was plentiful and you could get it pretty much everywhere and it was cheap. And so if they're just going to make it really expensive and put it in the hands of like Philip Morris and all these tobacco companies, then just keep it illegal, you know. But, you know, eventually I have accepted that there's just so much bad that goes on with the drug war that we just have to legalize it. But yeah, it grinds my gears whenever people say that. It's like, you know, like, can you imagine like lettuce? Like, we need to legalize lettuce, but it must be taxed and regulated to death. You know, it's like, why? You know, it's just a plant. You know what I mean? You should be able to grow it in your backyard and use it however you want. But yeah. So anyways, who knows what, you know, that's where the devil's in the details, you know, how this whole thing gets rolled out. But I'm sure that there's a lot of big companies just like Vicente Fox is like just licking their chops, ready to get in a giant, like I said, the biggest market in the world once a market like that opens up, the first movers are going to be the big winners.
And speaking of winning, we touched on this, I think, last time, just more positive news in terms of Mexico's opportunities going forward. Mexican automotive exports reach highest point in last 15 months. Mexican-made vehicle and auto parts exports total $15 billion. That's 42% up from last year. And I did see on the Telegram channel, your favorite, the Dollar Vigilante, he telegrammed something to the tune of, although I do think it makes sense. He said, if you're thinking of buying a European manufactured automobile, probably not a good idea because of everything that's going on now in Europe and the collapse of manufacturing, you'll need spare parts and stuff. So I think that's smart. It's probably better to stick, if you're in Mexico, buying North American made or Mexican made car or other jurisdictions, even Toyota, which is sort of pushing back against the ESG stuff, it might be better to get, you know, like go with a manufacturer like that, like Toyota. You don't want to rely on regions like Europe that who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's good to hear that he still has some common sense. I mean, yeah, obviously you want to buy a car that's like you can get parts close to you. But if you're going to buy a European car in Mexico, I mean, you're probably really rich anyway, so you probably afford it. But yeah. I mean, of course that, you know, and they manufacture a lot of stuff here in Mexico. So I personally, I don't try to spend a lot of money on cars. So I just try to buy something I know is going to be cheap to fix. And I just ride it till the wheels fall off.
Yeah, as you said, in Mexico, you're either really rich or a drug dealer. No, I'm just kidding. I do the same thing with cars. I drive them until they fall apart or the transit police take them away from me, as this happens. So that's a long story, though. We're going to jump to our second break again. James' website is borderlessblog.com, borderlesshealthinsurance.com. Follow him on the socials. We'll be right back.
Whoa! Peddling fake meat leads to cannibalism?
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
A top executive of the fake meat company Beyond Meat was arrested for biting a man's nose, ripping the flesh off the tip of the nose.
The food company executive was arrested in Fayetteville after police say he bit a man's nose. 53-year-old Doug Ramsey is facing charges of terroristic threatening and third-degree battery. According to the police reports, it happened in a parking garage near Razorback Stadium.
So a fake meat company that Al Gore is heavily invested in and is part of his quest to be the world's first fake meat billionaire has been arrested for eating human flesh? Let's get this straight. Real animal meat is verboten to eat, but human flesh is fine to munch on? There have been climate activists claiming that unchecked climate change will lead to human cannibalism. Well, we may have our first case. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The World Council for Health, WCH, a coalition of scientists, doctors, lawyers, and civil society advocacy organizations, opposes the World Health Organization, WHO's, pandemic treaty, expected to be ratified in 2024. The WCH considers the proposed WHO agreement is unnecessary and a threat to sovereignty and inalienable rights. It increases the WHO's power to declare unjustified pandemics, impose lockdowns, and enforce expensive, unsafe, and ineffective treatments against the will of the people. The WCH believes citizens have a right to participate in any agreement that affects their lives, livelihoods, and well-being. In addition, the WHO failed in approving the injurious H1N1 swine flu vaccine for a controversially declared pandemic. The WHO failed during the COVID-19 chapter as it encouraged lockdowns, suppressed early preventative treatments, and recommended product interventions that were neither safe nor effective. The WCH states the WHO cannot be allowed to control the world's health agenda, nor enforce biosurveillance while it is caught in a perpetual conflict of interest by accepting substantial funding from private interests that use their contributions to influence and profit from WHO decisions and mandates.
It's never a burden to fight for what's right. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we're back with James Guzman, borderlessblog.com. And just more good news out of Mexico is that the federal government is planning to build a $4 to $5 billion natural gas processing plant in the Gulf Coast of Veracruz, from where natural gas would be shipped to Europe, says López Obrador. And he's saying, so again, we might be helping Europe not freeze this winter. It's interesting on many fronts. The AMLO government, especially in terms of energy, is doing quite well, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I hope the someone in the U.S. State Department just blow up that natural gas thing. That would be a shame, you know. So that I heard they have a habit of doing that. But yeah, no, hell yeah, man. It'd be nice. It seems to me that, you know, Mexico in the future, I hope I'm not, you know, let's knock on wood here, that you know, the as far as the energy situation here, it's looking okay. And seems that the government, at least this government, is pretty dependent on keeping the country sovereign as far as and independent as far as energy goes. And they do have, you know, it's a large country with lots of resources. So, yeah, I think that's good news.
But I was thinking about this, I think, today or yesterday, just going around a bit and thinking of the population, 125 or so million people in Mexico. And in some ways, I feel like the government here, and you know, maybe in other countries in Europe or somewhere else where they're more politically, the power is concentrated and the technocracy maybe is more advanced and there's less of a population. So the leaders fear the population less. But I feel here in Mexico, at least for now, they can't go too far, no, because easily you can have the people, you know, do another revolution or just get angry with the government, no?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the idea with the whole, whatever they're calling it, the kind of pink wave going throughout Latin America. I think it has to do with kind of more populist, movements and that kind of thing going on. You know, there's a theory that as technology improves, that the governments, the nation states are going to find it harder to keep their, especially the higher taxpayers within their borders if they don't treat them well. And if, you know, people are upset that in a lot of ways, because travel was a lot harder, communication was a lot harder, that they could treat the, you know, nations could treat, the governments could treat their subjects as basically employees, and that they would switch to kind of a client model where, especially like I'm saying, not just all the public, but that the taxpaying public would, since they would be able to leave, that the governments would have to treat them more like clients. And so that they could leave at any time. So they have to like treat them well. So, you know, possibly this is kind of a pivot for different types of governments that are trying to, you know, answer to the public in different ways and, you know, get people to want to move there and to want to, you know, do business there and that kind of thing. And I also think that kind of a breakdown in the, I guess you could call it like the American-led globalist order that we've been under. I think we're going to kind of a different type of a model. And a lot of these governments are kind of this new wave that's going throughout Latin America.
Multipolarity is going to save us.
Yeah,
well, sure. We'll mm-hmm. see. but again, there's I had Jesse Zorowell, my TNT colleague, on. It was last week, and he's pretty black-pilled on it, and I am sort of as well, that multipolarity will actually lead us toward world government. And if you look at the, you know, at the technical nature, that's how a world federation is basically the U.S., you know, federated model writ large, where you plug in all 200 nations, like the 50 U.S. states are in this, you know, loose federation.
What is?
That the world government is basically a world federation. So you would put together all 200 states.
In the what world government, though? What are you talking about? Like, you're talking about like the UN or something?
Oh, multipolarity. I mean, it's a whole other subject. You know, BRICS Plus, and then this whole, you know, new multipolar world about evening out the power, you know, where the US has too much power and it's losing its status while the rest of the world, you know, gains a bit, you know, a balancing sort of act. But anyways, I did want to go back to more good news about Mexico, given what we just talked about, the auto manufacturing, the increased connectivity, the petroleum, the lithium that's been nationalized, Lithiomex, I think it's called. And now 15 Italian businesses or companies have come to Mexico as part of near shoring. And it says is they're going to create a manufacturing center for 15 of these food, agro-industrial, biomedical, and Italian technological companies who are going to invest in Mexico. So again, yet more good news. So, you know, despite the security situation, the overall trend, you know, and we've got the same problems as everywhere else. Inflation, wages are not increasing, you know, while real estate and everything else is increasing. But there are, I think, just more and more increasing opportunities. You've got all of these foreigners flooding in. I was just talking to a Mexican friend last night, and he dated a Chinese American. It's interesting. And she just came here for no reason. She just came here to come to become a digital nomad. And been here for like a year, just working as a digital nomad in Mexico. And it's just shocking to hear how so many foreigners are flooding in and becoming the digital nomads in Mexico. So, yeah.
I've always thought it was interesting that, you know, when you're all over Europe or when you go to all kinds of different places, you always see Asians and specifically Chinese tourists. You know, they're really big, especially in Europe. But I've noticed, you know, the time has been Latin American, especially Mexico. I never see them here. I don't know if they're like scared of, you know, they hear about Mexico and they're just like, skip it. You know what I mean? But you see a lot of people from different places, parts of the world, but I haven't seen the big amount of Chinese that I do in other countries. But yeah, for sure. A lot of people come down I think we've spoken about Peter Zeihan before. I don't agree with everything that he says, you know, his outlooks. But one thing that he says interesting is just, you know, that, you know, the U.S. specifically and Mexico, obviously, they complement each other. They have still a demographically healthy right next to each other. And as we were just talking about, things go down to maybe multipolar or however you want to call it, people concentrating on their own hemispheres, that they would be complementing each other's economy as well. And yeah, just a big wild card is the safety issue in Mexico, because, you know, it can all these people that are, you know, putting, you know, foreign direct investment, that's great. But, you know, if they don't feel secure with their, you know, especially billions of dollars of investment, then they're just going to go somewhere else. So I think that at some point in time, you know, they're going to have to do something about it. They're going to come in and do, you know, there's going to be some sort of a foreign intervention or something to try to get the security situation under control, because it's just so much, you know, money up for grabs. That is basically, unfortunately, what it boils down to.
And just somewhat related to the security situation, I saw a piece of news that I thought was kind of amusing, and it just kind of tells you how bad things are in this sense, that the government in Guadalajara has created a new app on your phone where if you're going to buy a car, you can actually solicit a government agent. I forget from which department, but you just make like a solicitation, and then the government agent will meet with you in person, like wherever you're buying the car from, and check the car to make sure it's not a stolen vehicle. Because if you buy a stolen vehicle, then, you know, you can get in trouble with the police. Even if you bought it fair and square, get in trouble with the police or get it taken away. I don't know. But how bad is it when you have to solicit through an app a government agent to check the car you're thinking of buying to make sure, you know, it's not stolen? I mean, it's good news.
Yeah. I mean, normally you have to go to their office and, you know, they're just like, oh, you missed this piece of paper, you missed that piece of paper. And it's a big pain in the ass. Well, I mean, I suppose that's more convenient, but, you know, convenience is the double-edged sword that we're being sliced with. So it's more convenient, but what does that mean down the road, you know?
Yeah. And we got about a minute or a little more left. You're going to stick around with us, right? And Vance from My Latin Life will be joining us. So were you? I can't recall. You were on his podcast, or you're familiar with him? No.
Yeah, I've been on his podcast.
So we can sort of riff for people interested on Latin America, beaches, digital nomadism, expatriation, tax stuff, residencies. You know, you name it. Food, women. You and I are both married to Mexicans. I think Vance is flying solo. And so, you know, we talked last time about passports, Vance and I. And so, yeah, just think of some stuff we can go over. Remind people again, best places to find you on the internet.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, guys, hit me up, jamesguzman.com. You can check out my stuff there if you need a consultation call. And as always, I help people with international health insurance at borderlesshealthinsurance.com. And yeah, just check out, I got blogs and podcasts and stuff there, so you can get all kinds of free info at borderlessblog.com.
All right, stay on the line, James. We'll be right back after the break with both James and Vance from the Borderless Blog and My Latin Life. We'll be right back.